Chapter 23, Confronting the Dread. Descomo Manor was beautiful at night. By the time Sonny and Dot approached the entry, torches blazed brightly, licking the night air. Guards stood ready, as they had at the entrance to Highgate. However, the soldiers here reviewed Dodd's invitation and then quickly admitted him with pleasant words of greeting. "Don't you think Kamenna should post his guards closer to the lake?" said Dodd to Sonny jokingly, trying to relax the tension they both felt over Dilly's predicament. "You mean you're scared of his pets?" asked Sonny, brushing hair out of her face. "Not me, for others less brave," said Dodd in a mannish voice. He puffed his chest and grinned. "I'd actually prefer his pets right now over ever having to request the Triblot barrier be dropped again. One or two sets of fangs instead of 50 swords. What could a little snake do?"
"Little," gasped Sonny. "Hardly."
"Besides," continued Dodd, amused with the subject, "it would be fun to see Diserpentis at night, don't you think? I hope one pops out of the water as we stroll by."
"Don't say that," chided Sonny, becoming serious. "Bad luck will get us."
Shooter was trotting along the lakeside, nearing where they had seen the Diserpentis before.
"Oh, you think so?" said Dodd, smiling even bigger.
"It happens all the time," explained Sonny, pushing the pestering lock of hair once more from her face. "The moment you mock something troublesome, you're the one facing it. Bad luck, I tell you. Don't say another word about that beast until we're safe inside the palace."
Sonny's voice reminded Dodd of his mother scolding him. But no one could blame Sonny for being nervous. By the entry gate to Descomo Manor, the area was well lit, especially around the soldiers. On the other hand, along the lakeshore, where they were riding all alone, the path had more spaces of darkness between torches, and the mist rising from the water didn't help create a comforting ambience either.
"So, you don't want me to sing about the wee little black pond snake?" joked Dodd. Despite concern for Dilly and anticipation of the coming confrontation, Dodd was enjoying the moment. It was much like the pleasure of going on a date to a haunted house.
"Dodd!" scolded Sonny.
"Snakey, little snakey," mocked Dodd playfully, brimming with satisfaction.
"Dodd, I'm warning you,"
scolded Sonny, bristling up as she glanced toward the murky water. She instantly looked away, trying not to dwell upon the creepy tree shadows that danced on the glass-like surface.
"Where are you, little snakey?" called Dodd, puckering to whistle. But before he could conjure so much as a peep, he was thwarted.
Womp! Sonny hit Dodd squarely across the side of his head.
"I told you to stop teasing me," she said defensively. "I'm serious about bad luck. It's funny until it happens to you. Keep in mind, we're both on this horse by the lake."
Dodd rubbed his cheek, mostly for show, and grumbled, "Sorry."
"During the day is one thing," continued Sonny, feeling driven to explain herself. "But seeing that creature at night, with its deathly cold eyes and its wriggling body..."
Sonny shivered. "It would be, well, over the line for me. I can assure you of that. I think I'd pass out."
Dodd rode in silence for a few moments, feeling his right ear tingle from being pounded by Sonny. For half a second, he even considered not teasing anymore. However, the lure of an approaching spot where the road was only a few feet from the water's edge was too much temptation.
Plop!
Noise from the surface of the water sent Sonny into near convulsions. Her hands grabbed Dodd from behind so tightly that her fingernails almost drew blood through Dodd's suit, and she screamed so loudly that Dodd knew it would be at least a week or two before he would be capable of hearing the mellow chirp of a bird or trickling of a small stream.
"Shh," said Dodd, trying desperately to quiet Sonny.
"I'm sorry. Shh." But Dodd's efforts were in vain. Sonny was terrified.
"Move! Move!" yelled Sonny, getting louder. "Make this horse move! It's coming!"
She kicked her feet frantically into Shooter's sides until he bolted.
"We're fine! Quiet down!" begged Dodd, tugging back on the horse's reins. "People are watching!"
"I heard it!" Sonny screamed. "That thing is coming!" Dodd did his best to calm Sonny while slowing the horse enough to avoid appearing distressed. Of course, the screaming drew attention anyway. However, when his efforts to convince Sonny didn't work, he finally confessed.
"I flipped a nut in the water. I made the noise."
Womp, 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 womp!
Dodd took four blows to the head before the beating ended.
"And Boots said Dilly was the physical one," whined Dodd.
"I warned you," argued Sonny, trying to catch her breath. "I could have died back there. My blood nearly curdled."
"Sorry," whimpered Dodd. He was sincere this time. His distance from the water made it easier to apologize without worrying about repeating the act, and his face stung enough that he had learned his lesson. A few minutes later, near the wonderfully lit castle, a man wearing an all-white suit and a stiff-rimmed black hat stopped Dodd and took Shooter by the reins, saying, 97. It was the number of the stall where he intended on putting Shooter. Thank you, said Sonny, quickly hopping off the horse. She was still mad about the pranks, though she felt better when she took a few steps and looked back at Dodd. The right side of his face was red, and one distinct handprint showed on his cheek. Thanks, said Dodd to the barn hand, following Sonny. 97, right? Yes, sir, said the man, purposefully looking away from Dodd's cheek to save him embarrassment. When you're ready for your horse, we'll fetch and saddle if you remember that number. Dodd, blurted Sonny with surprise. Look at that! She spoke as if all had been instantly forgiven and forgotten. A handsome, large brown horse with a charcoal-black mane and an unusual spot on one haunch was tethered to a post by the steps, which led to Commendus's front entrance. It's Grubber, said Sonny. You recognize that horse? Asked the man who was ready to lead Shooter away. Definitely. It belongs to my friend Boot. His steed was taken a few weeks ago. I'm sorry to hear that, remarked the barn hand. That horse showed up last night by the pond. We tied it to the post this morning, hoping one of the guests would recognize and claim it. I'll return it to Boot, offered Sonny. He lives at Twistyard. If you want to make sure that it's his, check the horse's front left leg on the inside by the hoof. Grubber has a 3-inch scar. Certainly, said the man, still holding the reins to Shooter. He walked over and examined Grubber's leg, and then said, What a stroke of luck for Boot. He has a beautiful friend willing to return his horse to him. 98, my lady. After the man was gone, walking the two horses to their allotted stalls, Sonny looked at Dodd and apologized for hitting him. That's okay, said Dodd, taking strides up the massive staircase. I deserved it. I shouldn't have teased you the way I did. My aunt's always on my case for going too far with stuff like that. Here, said Sonny. She pulled a glowing rock necklace from her purse and insisted, I want you to have it, Dodd. You might need it tonight, for good luck if nothing else. I've used it for good luck before. You and your superstitions. So did it work? Asked Dodd, pausing to let Sonny put Bly's wonderful invention around his neck. Sort of. Well, not really, confessed Sonny flatly. At the top of their climb, Sonny and Dodd paused on the patio to catch their breath. In front of them, double doors 15 feet high were held open by posh greeters, boisterously welcoming people to enter the palace. A few guests strolled around the granite porch, taking in the night air, while enjoying the company of others. All of them were dressed in stylish clothing, which made the setting picture-perfect. Nedro, good evening, called Dodd to one man who was sitting alone by the entrance. He looked healthy, early 60s, though likely 160, and very affluent. His clothes were not only elegant, they clearly aimed to prove his wealth, for the rims of his jacket lapels were bedazzled with glittering diamonds, and his cummerbund sash around his waist was laden with such jewels as would tilt the head of a queen. "I saw you this morning," answered Nedro, tipping his head in recognition, "but I don't think we've had a chance to formally meet." Nedro rubbed his smooth chin, then twisted the ends of his mustache until they curled. "I'm Dilly's friend Dodd, and this is her sister Sonny," said Dodd, straightening his back to look as dignified as he could. "It's a pleasure to meet you both," said Nedro officiously. "I'm Nedro of the Zoots, Seleucus' famous uncle." He stood and casually pulled back his coat, making sure to show off that his display of gems went all the way around his waist, not just in the front. In so doing, he flaunted his formidable frame and magnificent sword. It was no wonder he had been such a successful general and the subject of Uke's praise. "It's such a shame Seleucus and Uke weren't able to make it tonight," he said in a hollow, regretful voice. "If they could only prioritize better, perhaps they would create more room in their schedules for engagements like this." Nedro lifted his left hand and sipped something purplish-green from a gold-rimmed crystal goblet that had his name etched in the side. Dodd and Sonny glanced around, looking for Dilly. "Commendus understands people like us, doesn't he?" said Nedro dramatically, smiling as he raised his fancy cup. "Ramses Jubilus is my favorite. It's nice he's remembered to have it shipped from the other side of the world to please my taste." "Yes, right," rushed Dodd, not quite sure what to say. "Have you seen Dilly and Sir Long?" "I have," said Nedro slowly. Then he took another pleasant sip of his brew. I saw them this evening about half an hour ago, around the time of that unusual dropping of the barrier. Did you hear it? With the sky fading, I found it rash they dared pause our protection for anything. Perhaps troops were sent to Twistyard, or somewhere else, I suppose.
Right, said Dodd, hiding what he knew.
Sonny poked him to redirect Nedro, who was beginning to talk about the necessity of timeliness when positioning soldiers for attack.
You're absolutely brilliant at such things, said Dodd, barging into Nedro's explanation.
Dodd hurriedly glanced at Sonny and added, So where did her sister go?
Nedro blinked.
Her sister Dilly, with Sir Lonk, said Dodd hastily.
They were heading on a walk around back, responded Nedro, reeling from Dodd's compliment, yet confused by his unwillingness to listen patiently.
It's enjoyable to watch the stars come out, isn't it? He continued, relentless to a flaw, insisting on a mannerly style of conversation that better suited the occasion than Dodd's rush-rush.
Sonny tapped at the ground impatiently with her foot, as Nedro looked heavenward, and, in a melodramatic way, sighed, Not that I can see very many from here, with all the torches lit. I'd imagine they're fortunate enough to have a better view from wherever they are. If I weren't so averse to the dark, I'd take a stroll, too. Of course, my eyes. After the Battle of Hermounts.
Dodd and Sonny didn't know anything about the encounter he referred to, or the accident that had affected his sight, for Yuke hadn't gotten around to sharing that one, nor did they have time to listen to Nedro's leisurely retelling of it.
"And have you seen Commendus?" asked Dodd, looking expectantly at Nedro, doing his very best to hasten the conversation along. It was more than bordering on rude.
"He's probably inside," said Nedro bluntly, offended that they didn't show proper interest in chit-chatting with him.
"His party hall is filled with guests. They're beginning to sample the pre-platters."
"That sounds tempting," interrupted Dodd, cutting him off abruptly. "Come on, Sonny, let's go taste the snacks." He grabbed at Sonny's hand and whisked her off.
Nedro watched, feeling affronted, as the junior duo scurried away.
Once inside the palace, Dodd changed gears quickly. It was troubling to hear that Sir Lonk had already been alone with Dilly for half an hour, yet in front of other guests he had to contain himself. He knew people were likely working with Sir Lonk, as Duchy had claimed, so he didn't want to give them the advantage. In his most confidential whisper, Dodd shared with Sonny his plan.
"Go and find Commendus. Inform him about Dilly and Sir Lonk. Request he discreetly send soldiers to apprehend them."
"But I'm coming with you," argued Sonny, not nearly so quiet. "We need to stop Sir Lonk right now."
"If you want to help Dilly," said Dodd, finding it hard to speak softly and quarrel, "you need to get Commendus involved. We don't know who's helping Sir Lonk."
Dodd's anxious face whittled at Sonny's persistence. "We know someone facilitated the poisoning," he added pointedly, causing his throat to grow raspy from forcing emphasis into a whisper. He paused as a cluster of women whose gowns draped to the floor pranced by, decked in opulent jewelry.
"And he's probably got many more," continued Dodd, undeterred.
"You know how terribly influential Sir Lonk is. Who knows the number of people we're dealing with? We need backup."
Dodd's eyes begged. "Besides," he said, "who could beat Sir Lonk in a sword fight better than 50 men?"
Sonny exhaled noisily before responding.
"Okay," she muttered.
"I'll go search for Commendus. But promise me, Dodd, that you'll find Dilly and make sure she's unharmed."
"I'll protect her with my life," said Dodd, shivering as he felt a sudden chill, "though it won't be worth much without your soldiers coming."
Dodd quieted considerably at the end when he sensed the approach of others.
"Dodd, it's great to see you," boomed a familiar voice, overtaking their conversation. Tretacello strode up behind them with Bowler at his side.
"I thought you weren't going to be able to make it tonight," continued Tretacello cheerfully. His tone was happier than Dodd had ever heard him.
"I'm here," said Dodd, spinning around. Bowler stared.
"Are you all right?" he asked, pointing with one of his giant fingers at the red handprint on Dodd's face. All 6'10" of him appeared genuinely concerned.
"I'm fine, thanks," said Dodd restlessly. He pulled an uncomfortable smile and claimed, "The bugs by the lake were horrible, weren't they?"
Sonny blushed a guilty pink.
"Oh, I didn't notice," said Bowler honestly, tucking his tie back into his vest. In a suit, he hardly looked like Bowler. "Maybe it's my fur. It's so thick they don't usually bother me, except on my face where I'm nice and smooth like the rest of you." He smiled and nodded courteously at Sonny, attempting to flirt before rapping Tritacello on the back.
"Well, my good sage," he said, "this just proves it once and for all. Fancy buttons and dozens of awards don't make people right. even if they're wonderful at swordplay and wearing all white. Bowler enjoyed the rhyme, and it showed on his face.
"So Long said he didn't know,"
grumbled Dungo, contradicting Bowler as he came bustling up, wearing an unusual custom-made outfit that allowed for his forearms and tail. He looked completely out of place and miserable in the relatively homogeneous crowd around him, Bowler included, for with the full suit and shoes on, Bowler appeared like an immensely well-built man. Dungo, on the other hand, didn't. His bulk and hunch and forearmed, big-footed, pokey-horned look made him stick out wretchedly, a clumsy brown bear among the dainty white sheep. Even Dodd felt bad for him. "Perhaps it was the way Sir Lunk said it," suggested Tritacello, mediating the squabble. "I, too, recall he seemed confident Dodd wouldn't be coming tonight." Bowler grinned at Dungo, justified by Tritacello's memory, while Dungo shook his head, disagreeing. "Look at you," said Dodd, trying to express that he thought Dungo cleaned up nicely. He worked hard to hold back his laughter, for seeing Dungo in clothes was like looking at a pet that was poorly dressed by a little girl for a tea party, and knowing his personality made it all the more funny.
"Look at yourself, puny ugly worm,"
grumbled Dungo sullenly, all the while squinting callously at Dodd. He hated the circumstance. Dodd would have taken offense if he hadn't already met Dungo, but since he was prepared for debauched and spiteful comments, filled with pessimism and selfishness. Sonny, however, had never seen him before, and therefore looked horrified. She poked at Dodd's calf with her shoe, reminding him to hurry. "What Dungo's incapable of saying," said Bowler, looking brilliant in his attire, "is that you, Dodd, appear sharp. I mean, voila, you're accompanied by beauty." He pointed at Sonny and then gazed cleverly into her eyes, adding in his most debonair voice, "Your lady friend here looks simply radiant." "This is Sonny, Dilly's little sister," said Tritacello, helping Bowler out with introductions. "Oh, I see the family resemblance," began Bowler. He forthwith hung his head in respect and said, in a somber, hushed tone, "My deepest condolences, my lady. Bamboo is the greatest, most wonderful man I've ever met. We all mourn with you." "I knew I should have stayed with them longer," added Tritacello, showing remorse for having returned to Green early, before Bamboo, Zerny, and Jib. "It's hard on all of us, isn't it, Sonny?" said Dodd, glancing sideways. Sonny was dutifully bound by her driving desire to help Dilly, so she hardly allowed herself to think about Bamboo's passing. She caught Dodd's eyes with a "save Dilly" look. Seeing the strength of his three friends gave Dodd an idea. "Would you quickly give me a hand with something?" he asked. The moment the words escaped his lips, an overflowing feeling of regret set in. And Sonny looked mortified, struck with disbelief. Dodd had just told her to watch out for others, yet trusted the likes of the bulky man and strange creature who accompanied Tritacello. "We'd be happy to help," said Tritacello politely. "What would you like us to do?" Somehow his kind words didn't erase the ominous feeling. I actually meant help Sonny. She wanted to speak with Commendus alone, and I need to run for a minute. The bathroom. All that riding cramped me up. I may be a while. Would you escort her, please?" "It's nothing to be ashamed of," said Bowler, misreading the embarrassment on Dodd's face. "You're probably still recovering from your injuries. How long did Higa have you out?" "Excuse me," blurted Dodd, not answering Bowler. He turned and ran down the hall. He didn't slow his pace when he passed crowds of people, or even when two guards specifically instructed him to stop running. Dilly needed his help immediately. He could feel it as clearly as he could feel the weight of Pap's sword jangling at his side. On the back patio behind the palace, a few giant torches burned in a circle with moths darting at the dancing flames. Over 30 people stood in a clump, talking and enjoying the magnificent view of the city. Also, at least 100 more were strolling around the yard, following a stone path that was lit with occasional torches. "Where is she?" mumbled Dodd to himself. "Think, think, think." Dodd frantically scanned the area and struggled to know where to go. He suspected Sir Lonk wouldn't want to be near other people, so he wasn't likely on the patios. Yet if he were in the vast yard, where would he hide? There were so many places to choose from. In the orchards, or by the lake, or with the cattle, or somewhere beyond the outbuildings, and the list went on and on. Suddenly, inspiration came. He saw a Drat family running from an army. They were being pursued vigorously while trying to escape, hiding in bushes, then running, hiding in a forest, then running, hiding in a hole, then running, finally hiding by a waterfall and finding safety. The key was the water. it was loud enough to drown out the crying of their little ones. Dot instantly knew where Dilly was. She had to be near the trickling of water he could hear, coming from the darkened lower portion of the patios where Commendus kept his exotic fountains. Following his ears and wearing Sonny's glowing rock necklace for light, Dodd ran into the night toward a flight of stairs. The sound of water became louder and louder with every step. After descending to the lower level, all of the guests and torches were left behind. Boom, 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 boom. Dodd's heart began to pound in panic like the clomping of a galloping horse. With no moon in the sky, all of the stars cast an eerie light, which caused the rising water in the fountains and the gently swaying trees in the planter boxes to come to life. Even the night breeze seemed to be the breath of a hidden enemy. "Where is she? Where is she? Where is she?" demanded Dodd of himself, moving between the fountains as a lion would, stalking his prey. He was becoming impatient. A few more minutes would be too late. His eyes searched for movement and light, and his ears tried to ignore the splashing water while refocusing on the smallest of other detectable sounds. After passing the first two fountains, Dodd noticed a third, throwing water 20 feet in the air. He instinctively knew it was the spot, the place where he'd find Dilly and Sir Lonk, because the gnawing pit in his stomach said so. It was terrifying to consider what he would see and face. However, without hesitation, he bolted toward it in answer to destiny. As he approached with speed, he recognized two people, obscured by the spray, struggling on the other side of the thundering water. "Sir Lonk!" yelled Dodd at the top of his lungs, hurrying around the fountain as fast as he could. "Sir Lonk! Dilly!" To his horror, Dodd approached in time to see Sir Lonk pointing Jilser at Dilly's throat. "If you take another step, she dies!" shouted Sir Lonk in a depraved voice. "Run, Dodd!" cried Dilly, her tears marring her words. "Run while you still have a chance! Get away from here as fast as you can!" But Dodd stood still, momentarily paralyzed. His feet were like the rooted, stubborn stumps of trees, not able to retreat as Dilly bade, nor attack in her defense. Sir Lonk exploded in anger. He pressed the sharp tip of his blade closer to Dilly's throat until it touched, and yelled, "Silence!" "I can't leave you, Dilly," sobbed Dodd, standing motionless. "Run!" begged Dilly, feeling her life was at an end. "Save the secrets!" Dodd didn't understand. It was all too confusing. She was the key to the secrets, not him. Her life was important, not his. Without Dilly and her part in Bamboo's plan, Dodd couldn't obtain the secrets, even if he did run, which his legs forbid him to do anyway. "He has Higgis half," yelled Dodd bitterly. "It's no use." "Trust me and run," pleaded Dilly urgently. Her voice was failing her as she winced under the uncomfortable prick of Sir Lonk's encroaching blade. She had resorted to a crumpled position upon the ground, tearfully holding injuries she had sustained from dueling. Sir Lonk let out an atrocious cackle as he looked toward Dodd triumphantly. "He has the keys, doesn't he?" said Sir Lonk, turning back to face Dilly, who lay at his feet. "You gave him the keys, you foolish child!" "Dilly!" roared Dodd, but she couldn't speak. "You're as imprudent and irrational as your bumbling great-grandfather," continued Sir Lonk mockingly. "His stupidity cost him his life, Dilly. He could have lived so much longer, so much stronger, with more power than this world's ever seen. And what did his integrity buy for him? A lousy death at the hands of cheap labor." "Run!" squeaked Dilly pathetically, begging Dodd. "Not likely," chided Sir Lonk. "Dodd won't run. Not with you here, Dilly." Sir Lonk bent down and stuffed a handkerchief in Dilly's mouth as she tried to explain the situation to Dodd. And with the flick of one wrist, he spun Dilly's face to the ground. "You're a lady. Die like one!" screeched Sir Lonk, his voice cutting the night air as he raised Jilser to strike. "No!" yelled Dodd, leaping forward and drawing his sword. His movements forced Sir Lonk to stop his assault on Dilly in order to defend himself. "Simply pathetic," responded Sir Lonk, easily deflecting Dodd's attack. "You can't save her. I'll kill you, and then I'll kill her. It's what I do best." Dodd swung his weapon in the air and began to back up slowly, drawing Sir Lonk farther and farther from Dilly. And when he had lured him far enough, he yelled, "Run, Dilly! Run!" But Dilly didn't say anything, and she didn't move. "If you've killed her," sobbed Dodd, "I'll cut your heart out. I swear I will." Dodd used his left hand to wipe tears from his eyes. The farther he backed up, the less he could see of Dilly, so he watched in vain for any movement from the glowing rock she wore around her neck. "That will be hard to do when you're dead," taunted Sirlank cruelly. "But look at the bright side. I'll put you out of your misery quickly if you share a little secret with me." Many unspeakable words rolled through Dodd's mind as he chose wisely the ones he used. "You putrid, loathing, degenerate snake! I would die 100 times before bending to tie your shoes! So if you're asking for my help, the best I can offer is to teach you a lesson with this!" Dodd lunged forward, jabbing viciously with all his might. "Are you going to punch me too?" asked Sirlank, laughing at Dodd's weak attempts to strike. "I'm the best, Dodd. Accept it and give in. If I wanted you dead right now, I could kill you this instant. Or the next. Or the next. Or the moment after that. I'm playing with you, Dodd. You're a toy to me, and not a very clever one either." Sirlank dipped his sword to the ground and held it between his legs. He leisurely pulled his gloves off, first one, then the other. "Dilly made me get these wet while I was trying to persuade her into telling me where she put my keys. What a pity. I loathe wet gloves." Sirlank threw them at Dodd and smiled wickedly as he held up his right hand near his glowing stone. A jagged scar, the same scar Dodd had seen in his mind, zigzagged across Sirlank's hand. "Do you recognize this? Your grandfather gave it to me, and a whole lot more." "Oh, silly me, I forgot. You haven't read his books, or any of Humberone's." "You stole them," cried Dodd angrily. "They're amusing to read. Everyone has a handle or price, and their writings have done a marvelous job of filling me in. And it's the least Pap could do for me after what he did. He practically killed me. The night we fought, he got lucky 5-1, and after I was worn down from defeating the other 4, my disguise got in the way of our swordplay. If it hadn't been for that, I'd have ended it there. Pap was no match for me." Sirlank shifted his weight and grimaced. "Do you know it took me 8 months of therapy to learn to walk normally again? Me, the great Sirlank! Who would have thought it? Never before and never again. I need the secrets, Dodd. They're rightfully mine. So this sort of folly won't happen again. Pap deserved what he got. I only wish I could have seen his face when he died." "You poisoned him, you coward," blurted Dodd, gripping the handle of his blade so tightly that his knuckles turned white. "Not without help," said Sirlank factually, as calm as the night's gentle breeze. He still held his rapier between his knees, teasingly, as he rubbed his hands and explained the way a professor would. "Pap was on to me," he said, holding one finger up. "So someone else had to offer the toast, someone cozier." Sirlank crossed his fingers and then pulled them down into a fist, signifying a close friend had poisoned Pap. "Of course," he quickly added, drenched with arrogance, "if I could have chosen, I would have waited for a chance to duel with him again, man to man, and I'd have beaten him horribly." "In your dreams, maggot!" yelled Dodd, lunging towards Sirlank, attempting to take advantage of his weak position while his sword was down and his mind was on the conversation. But the move ended abruptly with Sirlank slicing the shoulder of Dodd's suit. Sirlank was impenetrably good at dueling. "I'm telling you the truth when I say I could end this right now," mocked Sirlank, momentarily covering his eyes with one hand and recklessly waving Jilsa around with the other, impersonating Dodd's clown-like moves. "I'm always one step ahead of you," Sirlank gloated. "You name it. One of my personal favorites was watching how wretchedly you all acted in dealing with your pest problem. Oh, and in case you were wondering, I first invited Mrs. Two Sons on a one-way fishing trip, so they couldn't help you. They're stranded and starving to death. Isn't that nice?" "I should have let you die when I had the chance," blared Dodd angrily, feeling a surge of energy. "I saved your life and you don't even know it. The night you rode with Zerny and Strat, I was the one defending you with stones. And what did you do? You blundered around with your torch like a walking target. They'd have finished you off if it weren't for me." Dodd shook his sword in the air for emphasis. "You simple fool," laughed Sirlank proudly. "You see with your eyes, but you're still blind as a gopher pup. It's almost pointless to explain. I planned that ambush to incite conflict. The only people you saved were as pathetic as yourself. Not worth much. I signaled the attack by holding my torch up while entering the tent. And when I continued to hold it, the hirelings knew not to shoot me. It was easy faking an injury. And to think I was that convincing? I'm always one step ahead. Always. Always! Why do you think people call me the Dread?" Flashes of Pap rushed through Dodd's mind, as well as bits and pieces of conversations with his mother and Josh and Alex and Aunt Hilda. It was empowering to recall them. It gave him fresh courage to stand boldly, even if only to fall.
"I think they call you the Dread because your face is so ugly," said Dodd defiantly, rubbing his shoulder where Sir Lonk had glanced him. His tongue was the only good sword he knew how to use.
"Very funny," snorted Sir Lonk.
"And because you're dreadfully jealous of people who possess real influence, like Bamboo," mocked Dodd, backing up slowly, smiling as Sir Lonk scowled.
"And your brother Tarot," he added bravely.
"Tarot's nothing without me," snapped Sir Lonk, losing his cool. "I made Tarot!"
"And don't forget about your son," chided Dodd. "He acts dreadfully weak. He's a shoeshiner for Saab and his pals."
"He's young!" boomed Sir Lonk, yelling so loud that spit flew out of his mouth. "He'll learn his place or else!"
"And then there's your dreadfully sorrowful name, Chantoli."
"I didn't invite you to use my family name," growled Sir Lonk, turning impishly evil, dark as the hands of the devil. The volume of his voice was no longer peaking with his emotions, for he was past red hot. His eyes burned ferociously, like white coals. His chit-chatting had come to an end, for it was no longer enjoyable now that Dodd held a mirror to his face.
"Chantoli! Chantoli! Chantoli! Chantoli!" screamed Dodd till his throat hurt, feeling the rage of indignation bubble to the surface.
"Clash! Clank! Clash! Clank! Clank!"
Dodd and Sir Lonk jumped in and out, swashbuckling like pirates. It was a unique feeling for Dodd. The training and instruction he had received suddenly flowed freely through his sword, making him almost equal to the task. He lunged and darted, slicing and jabbing, then ducked and dodged as Sir Lonk pressed upon him. It was back and forth for a few brief minutes before tragedy struck.
Swipe!
Sir Lonk's sword gouged into Dodd's left shoulder, forcing him to cry out in pain. He staggered back, feeling defeated, until he remembered Dilly's special move. Disaster. Unfortunately, when Dodd tried the move, it really was a disaster. Sir Lonk easily deflected it, knocking Dodd's sword from his hands, and then mocked the action, acknowledging gleefully that it hadn't worked for Dilly either.
"Just give me the keys and I'll let you live," said Sir Lonk, not even winded from the fight, for he had only been playing.
He pushed at Dodd with Jilser, backing him up against a knee-high stone wall that dropped off on the other side.
"You're a liar," yelled Dodd, holding back tears. "Even if you were telling the truth for once, I still wouldn't give you the keys. My integrity can't be bought."
Sir Lonk swung his sword casually, forcing Dodd to trip backward in order to avoid being hit.
"Everyone has a price," said Sir Lonk, bearing a wicked smile. "Everyone. What if I were to offer you Dilly? I could do a lot worse than dip her in water and poke her with my blade. Now tell me where my keys are."
Dodd fidgeted on the wall, reaching deep inside, gaining the inner strength to respond.
"I won't tell you where they are. You don't scare me."
Dodd groaned, feeling triumphant in defeat. He was lying on his back on the rock ledge like a deathbed, but still true to himself. It was his final stand. Sir Lonk prodded at Dodd's suit with Jilser and smiled.
"I suppose you don't need to tell me," he said slowly. "I see them."
His eyes filled with greed and power as he looked at Dodd's chest and pointed. The three keys on Dodd's chain were dangling in plain sight, next to his glowing stone, having jostled out of his shirt when he fell. Air from the darkness below wafted up to Dodd in his moment of despair. It smelled wonderful, and he instantly knew where he was.
"You win. Here are your stupid keys," whimpered Dodd, faking submission as he plopped his hand over them.
But rather than handing the keys over, which Sir Lonk fully expected, Dodd tore the lucky glowing rock from his neck and threw it at Sir Lonk's face while rolling sideways off the wall.
"You can't hide from me," bellowed Sir Lonk viciously. "I'm coming down to get you. To hurt you, Dodd."
It was almost as if he had turned into a horrible creature, overcome with desire for the keys. Meanwhile, Dodd scurried into the safety of Dr. Shelderhig's overgrown garden, which was at the bottom of the 12-foot drop.
"It's just a matter of cat and mouse," said Sir Lonk, throwing Dodd's glowing stone down to measure depth.
He then followed, landing in a fighting position with his sword in hand.
"Do you know why I like cats?" he continued, hunting for Dodd with his eyes.
"Because they play with their prey before they kill it. We enjoy that sort of thing, Dodd."
When Sir Lonk spoke, his voice echoed throughout the garden, magnified by the walls. "If you give up now and throw me the keys,
I'll leave you and Dilly alone. I give you my word. I only want the keys. Come out and let's talk. Besides, you don't really think I want to hurt you or Dilly, do you? She's practically my daughter. And you're such a smart boy. You deserve to live. You're more like Pap than I thought. How did you know I was planning on a little accident in Sword Tower? Be good and come out, so we can strike a deal.
Sir Lunk pleaded his case, lying through his nose as he crept about the garden, systematically moving Dodd toward one side to corner him. Each pause was calculated to better track his prey, and unfortunately, it was working due to Dodd's poor landing when coming off the wall. He had injured one leg bad enough that he moved faster on all fours, which created the additional problem of producing more sound, becoming an easier target to follow.
"Dodd, let's be friends," persisted Sir Lunk, still stalking him. He was getting close. "I was good friends with your grandpa. I know what happened was awful, and you blame me, but it wasn't entirely my fault. There's so much more to the story than you know. If you give me the keys now, I'll tell you the other half of the story. Why your grandpa had to die, and who killed him."
"You liar!" blurted Dodd.
He didn't mean to cry out. It just happened in anger.
"Aha, I've got you," said Sir Lunk, dashing through the bushes and vines to where Dodd was. In an attempt to hurry away, Dodd pushed too quickly with one foot and snagged his thick hide shoelace on a troublesome root. It stalled his movement long enough to leave him caught like a fish on a hook, waiting for the fisherman.
"You should have listened to me, Dodd," said Sir Lunk gloatingly. "Now you'll never know what really happened to Pap." Still trapped, Dodd turned to face his accuser for the last time. He knew it was the end. Time slowed down like it had when he fell off the wall near Pap's place, and everything around him came into focus. The stars were more beautiful than ever before. The smell in the air was intoxicating, and so wonderful that he wished to live at least a little longer, if but to enjoy the pleasure of smelling. The foliage under him was softer and more pleasant than his bed at home, and beyond the chatter of Sir Lunk's voice, Dodd could hear crickets and night beetles playing a magnificent symphony. Amidst everything wonderful for the senses to enjoy, Dodd could also see clearly Sir Lunk's baneful face, laughing with pleasure as he approached, close enough to discover Dodd's misfortune. Sir Lunk's eyes brimmed with hate, visible by the light of the rock around his neck, and his treader ring turned purple, filled with blood from his dark heart.
"Say goodnight," cackled Sir Lunk gleefully, pointing his sword to attack. It was the last thing he said before the tables turned. In an instant, all of the vines surrounding Sir Lunk came to life, and like a storm of rattlesnakes, they struck. The night devil was no enemy to Dodd. It had found prey that was as evil as its own name.
"Help! Help!" pleaded Sir Lunk, struggling to free his arm that held his sword. Though it was completely hopeless, the night devil had at least 15 squirming vines wrapping tightly around Sir Lunk's limbs, while its pod struck viciously at his glowing stone, latching onto his neck and chest. Within seconds, the dread was silent.